when he arrived there, a man called Ubay, the son of Hatim, of the tribe of Taj. Those of you who know Arabic, who know that Hatim is the example of generosity in the history of the Arabs, even before Islam. And Ubay was his son. Run. To the youth group whom am I pleased to see with us, I will just say that we are telling the military campaigns of Abu Bakr against the apostates, and I would like to repeat that the army that went on the borders of the Roman Empire was led by an 18-year-old Muslim. And before you came, I said this is about the age of some of the members of our youth group. Just to remind you that nobody is too young to take the largest responsibility for Islam. Yes? Ridda. Apostasy is to be a Muslim and then renounce it and join the enemy. Ubay told Khalid ibn Walid, please, I would like you to postpone your attack for 3 days. And I go to my people and I try to convince them. Which he did. He convinced his people to come back to Islam again. And this was his blessing because he could save his tribe as well as the Muslims an unnecessary battle. And then he went to the tribes of Asad and he beat them, and he went to the tribes of Tamim and the Banu Hanifa. In this area here there was a man called Tulayha al-Asadi from Bani Asad, who upon hearing that the Prophet was very ill, sent him a letter and told him, let us split the prophethood and I become a prophet, etc. And he made himself a prophet beside the Prophet, but Tulayha was beaten and he took his wife behind him on the horse and fled to Syria. Interestingly enough, later on this Tulayha came back as a Muslim and performed in the later battles of Islam very admirably. Then in Bani Tamim here, a woman called Sajah also claimed to be a prophet, and our people believed in her, and she became a military power. But when Khalid approached her, she was too frightened because the reputation of Khalid was so strong. He was never defeated in battle. He was the one who defeated the Muslims in the Battle of Uhud before he became a Muslim. And so she fled to the land of Yamama, where another man called Musaylima had already declared himself a prophet also. And Musaylima told her, your strength and my strength might be sufficient to win our battles. How about me marrying you and we work together? And he married her. And when she told her people that Musaylima married me, they asked her what was the dowry. And she said, no dowry, he didn't pay anything, and they said no. our dignity wouldn't permit it, he has to give you a dowry. So she went back to him, and you know what his dowry was? Exempting the Muslims from the morning prayer and the Isha prayer. And that was the dowry. Abu Bakr sent two armies, one under Ikrimah ibn Abi Jahl, that's army number three, and one under Shurahbil ibn Hassan. I know the names you will not remember. And they had already engaged the Musaylama and Sadah, his wife, but they found a difficulty until the army of Khalid joined them and they won their battle and the Musaylama was killed. Now there was the fifth army, Turaifah ibn Hajiz, where is number five? Two of the tribes of Hawazin and Bisalim. And then there was the army of Amr ibn al-As, to the tribes number six of Ghassan and Qadha, and then Khalid ibn Sa'id up to the tribes at the border of Syria, and then Al-Ala ibn al-Hadrami to Bahrain. Launched from here and he went to Bahrain. Some of the people of Bahrain came back to Islam and others insisted, and one night the Muslims heard a noisy, large noises in the camp of the enemy, and realized that they were drinking, and so they attacked them and defeated them. Then the army number nine, Hudayfa ibn Muhsin, to Oman, a place called the Daba in Oman, where a man called the Luqayt claimed the prophethood and he was defeated. Then number 10, the army of Al-Fajr to the rest of Oman, and Al-Muhajir ibn Umayyah to Sana'a and Hadramaut in Yemen, and then Suwayd ibn Bukran to Yemen and Tihama. Imagine a caliph sending one army abroad and 12 armies in the Arab Peninsula, but the result was quenching and putting out forever the fire of apostasy that threatened the religion, as well as gaining in stature in the eyes of the Roman and the Persian empires. Now we go to the threat from the Persian Empire, whose emperor had torn off the message of the Prophet and humiliated the messenger, etc. And I would like to get that's right. Just before that time, as history tells us, that the Khusro of the Persian Empire had already killed all his brothers so that there would be no competition on the throne. And when he died, Buran, a woman called Buran, a young girl called Buran, became the empress. And it was about her that the Prophet said they wouldn't ever meet success if their leader was that woman. They should have appointed some genius military leader, etc. But the empress became Buran. Then المثنى ابن حارثة and سويد ابن قطبة from this area here used to skirmish and attack the territory of the Persian Empire in what is now Iraq, and to raid them, etc., etc. And we noticed that the response was very weak. They attack a great empire and the response is very weak. So they together convinced Abu Bakr that they are weak now, and if you wait for them, they will recruit large armies to attack us, and we better attack them now. And at this time, Khalid was just finished from Banu Hanifa in the previous map, and he, Abu Bakr, sent Khalid ibn Walid to tackle this question. Interestingly, Khalid sent it to Abu Bakr that I need more help. That's the troops of Khalid, the troops of Al-Muthanna, but he said, I need more help. And Abu Bakr sent him one man called Al-Qa'qa ibn Amr, telling him an army that includes this man will never be defeated. Such was his confidence in the one man. And Khalid ibn Walid sent to Hormuz, the leader of the Persians, the message: if you take Islam, you are safe and secure, and if it is your wish, then you pay the jizya, and if you refuse both, I am coming to you with people who love death as much as you love life. And the two armies met and they clashed at this place called the Karbuna. And I put Zatul Salasil, it is also called the Battle of the Chains, because the Persian army chained their soldiers together in long rows. And when the whole row are chained together, then no one would be free to flee, to escape. And it is a sign of insisting on doing the battle, etc., etc. And the battle started by Khalid personally calling on the Hormuzan to fight him one-to-one, and Khalid killed Al-Hormuzan, and then the battle led to the victory of the Muslims. Then they conquered the place called the Ubulla, that was the main seaport at the time for the trade with India. And then Khusrum sent another large army led by a man called Qarin, and the defeated forces of Hormuz joined that army. They had the water resources with them, but Khalid said, don't worry, the water resources will belong to the more durable side, those who have the more patience. And also the battle started by a one-to-one, and Khalid killed Qarin, and there was a great massacre, and the Persians were defeated. Then here, the Persians sent another very large army led by a chap called Amr Zarat. But Khalid made a plan so that his sides, the wings of his army, were almost camouflaged. They disappeared. And he stood as one army. And when the Persians attacked, he gave the signal so that from both sides the wings of the Muslim army caught them, and they were defeated. Then there was the Battle of Alis, where another larger Persian army came and waited until the Persians sat to dinner, and then they attacked them and they fled. And this was the first time the Muslims knew a kind of food and give it a name that still exists until today. They, you know, the baklava, very multiple thin layers, and we call the thin, the Muslims called them ar-riqaq, means very thin. And still until today we eat riqaq. We go to the Alfie's home and we eat riqaq. And the word exists, and that was the first introduction of Muslims to the riqaq. Then Khalid proceeded to Amritia, and it surrendered without battle. And then the Persians and their non-Muslim Arab allies dug their feet at Hira and stuck there, but Khalid attacked them and they surrendered upon either Islam or the jizya or fight. And Khalid sent his emissaries to the surrounding areas, telling them, if you become Muslims, then you are from us, like us, exactly like us. If not, then you pay the jizya in lieu of our protection of you from the Persian armies that will come later on, or we take you by force. And the whole region of Al-Hira became Islamic territory. Some remained on their religion upon their choice, and some became Muslims. Those who remained would pay the jizya because they were exempted from military service, and because it was the Muslim army that would protect them, then they had to pay that tax. Then Khalid went up to Anbar, where there was a Muslim army led by Ayyad ibn Amr, and the Persians dug in again and built dug a trench, and Khalid went to the narrowest part of the trench and killed some camels to fill it up, and the army traversed over the dead camels, and when the people saw this, they asked for surrender. Then Khalid went to Ayn al-Tamr, here, where there was a mixed army of non-Muslim Arabs and Persians under the leadership of Mahran ibn Bahran. And the Arabs told the Persians, well, these are Arabs like us, let us fight them. And they did. But then the Arabs were defeated. And when the Persians saw this, they just fled away. Then Khalid went to Daumat al-Jandal. Again, there was battle between the Persians and the Arabs. The Arabs went into difficulty, so Abu Bakr ordered him to go for the help, which he did. And he went all the way up, that is Khalid ibn al-Walid, to Ar-Radab, where there were remnants of non-Muslim Arabs preparing for battle, and Khalid went to clear this. And then he went from Radab without telling his troops, went and had an Umrah in Mecca and came back without anyone noticing it. At which time he received a letter from Abu Bakr, because there was another front on the western side with the Roman Empire, and
they were really threatened, the Muslims. So the orders of Abu Bakr to Khalid was, go immediately to Syria in order to help your brothers there. And he went to Syria and left Al-Muthanna, leader over the eastern front. Al-Muthanna felt very threatened, so he sent it to Abu Bakr. And Abu Bakr was very ill, referred him to Umar. But this will come later on when we discuss Umar bin Khattab. Now we move from the front of the Persian Empire to the front of the Roman Empire. When Abu Bakr had already sent three armies under four leaders, each to later be the ruler of the area they occupy. Amr ibn al-As went to Palestine, Yazid ibn Abu Sufyan to Damascus, Abu Ubaidah to Hams, and Shrahbil to Jordan. All of this was called the Syrian front. This is Amman, this is Jerusalem, this is Al-Madin, and this is Homs. And so Hercules, the emperor of the Roman Empire, recruited a huge army. And who was the cunning man amongst the Muslim leaders? It was Amr ibn al-As. He was a very brainy man. So he suggested to Abu Bakr that we cannot remain dispersed, each in their own territory, and unless we join forces together, we will be defeated by that huge army prepared by Heraclius. Which they did. They retreated and withdrew from the areas they occupied to come and join forces here at this place called Yarmouk. One of the interesting points is that Abu Ubaidah ibn al-Jarrah, the leader of this army in Homs, in Syria, returned the jizya back to the people. This is a very interesting point because it sets the idea that the jizya is not just a tax. It is, we are to protect you. You are free not to join the army. But in lieu of that, you have to pay a defense tax. Somehow this was a win-win situation. Those who do not want to become Muslim would stay in their lands and farm them and not be pushed into fighting under a flag they don't believe in, the flag of Islam. And when Abu Ubaidah was to withdraw, he returned the jizya back to the people, and they were very upset. And they told him, we would like you to stay, you are very content, etc. But it was the military plan to leave and join together in order to face the army of Hercules. At this point, Abu Bakr gave them a very wise advice. I am not worried about your little number. I am worried about you for your sins. If you are sinners, this is my worry. If you are few in number, I'm not worried. And I think it is a very sound advice that we can take along until our present days. And then Abu Bakr said, well, I destroy the shaitan by Khalid ibn al-Walid. And as already told you, Khalid was here and got the orders of Abu Bakr in order to go and help his Muslim brothers here. Hajj Khalid did, taking a very peculiar route. It is not the straight one, because he didn't want to waste time skirmishing and battling with the people on the way. So he chose a rather empty route, but it was very dangerous because it was desert, there was no water. He had to cover the distance within 5 days. And so it is said that he asked his people to fill up a number of camels with water, to take the fill of water, and then muzzle them so that they wouldn't remunerate, to keep the water inside them. And then along the way he would slaughter those camels, take up the water, mix it with milk, and give it to the troops. Khalid came all the way and joined the Arabs, raising the flag of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. It was a flag called Al-Aqab. The army of the Muslims was 60,000 people. The army of the Romans was 240,000. And Khalid, who was, I think, the greatest military genius, talking to his friends, Amr ibn al-As and Abu Ubaidah and Shurahbil and Yazid ibn Abi Sufyan, and told them, well, you know, we cannot just send our separate individual armies, and we got to work under a unified leadership. And so he suggested to them, let each of us be the commander-in-chief for one day, which to them looked fair enough. And he requested them that he be the commander-in-chief the first day. And so he set his forces. On the right wing he put Amr ibn al-As and the Shurahbil ibn Hasana. On the left he put Yazid ibn Abi Sufyan. On the heart he put Abu Ubaidah ibn Jarrah. And he sent those people who know the Quran to read Surah Al-Anfal, which is also called the military surah of the Quran. And something very interesting happened. This is Khalid's army here, joining the others. This is the Roman army. Just before the battle, the leader of the heart of the Roman army sent a message that he wanted to see Khalid. And he was given permission and a safe conduit. And he went to Khalid. Khalid was nicknamed the Sword of Allah. The Prophet gave him that name and it became his nickname all the time. And so George, the son of Tudor, asked him, what is that sword of Allah that you have? Well reputed that when you use it you will win your battles. And Khalid told him, no, it is not a sword. It is just that we have the faith and we win our battles through our faith. And he said, well, tell me about your faith. And he told him about Islam. And the man converted to Islam and was led to take a bath and prayed 2 rak'ahs. And when it was battled, he was killed, became a martyr with the treasure of only 2 rak'ahs. So sometimes the best thing that can happen to you might happen in the last few minutes of your life. But so it was. The Romans dug a trench and were surrounded by marches. And so the Muslims attacked, and there was a very severe battle. and the Romans were defeated, and the very famous battle was the Battle of Yarmouk, the highest glory in the military career of Khalid ibn al-Walid. During the battle, things happened in Arabia. Abu Bakr died. Umar became caliph and sent a letter removing Khalid from the leadership and asking that the leader would be Abu Ubaidah and that Khalid should surrender the leadership to him. This letter arrived during the battle, so Khalid did not disclose it. And immediately the battle was won, he went to Abu Ubaidah, gave him the letter, said, "I am your obedient soldier." And this was the chivalry of Khalid ibn al-Walid. What happens after this belongs to the history of Umar ibn Khattab. Just to conclude the history of Abu Bakr, his main doings was the secure the integrity of the state from within and secure its borders from without. He started a government by splitting the empire into 10 states. I told you about his salary. One of the things he did was the collation of the Quran. The Quran was very dispersed and fragmented, etc. So he saw to it that all the Quran would be put, shall I say, in one sack as the Quran. He was the first to call the Quran the Mus'haf. This was his coinage. He was the first to be called the Khalifa, of course. He was the first Khalifa. He was the first Khalifa to be made Khalifa in the life of his father. And when his father knew that Muhammad died, he said, "What a loss. And who will be after him?" And they said, "Your son." And he said, "A good choice." He was the first to make a budget for the country. Whatever booty the soldiers won, 20% of this was given to the state. At the time there was no regular army. They didn't have an army like everybody has these days. When it was battle, the Khalif would say, "We want to fight this place, that front, etc." And the people would just volunteer, and each providing their own weapons, whether it be arrows or spears or horses, etc. And that is why what they won, they would take. It would be divided between them by the leader of the army, and 20% of that would go to the state. This, in addition to the zakat and in addition to the jizya paid by the non-Muslims, made the bulk of the budget. Abu Bakr ruled for 2 years and 3 months, and he died at the 13th Hijri year. He probably died with malaria, and before he died, he gathered the top people amongst the Muslims and told them, "I have chosen to you a caliph after me. Would you agree to that?" And they said, "Yes, we agree to the choice of the Khalifa of Rasulullah." And he told them, then it would be Umar ibn al-Khattab. And just before he died, he sent emissaries to Sayyidah Aisha, the wife of the Prophet, taking permission to be buried beside the Prophet, and he was buried beside Prophet Muhammad ﷺ. And those of you who went to Medina would stand before the grave of the Prophet saying, "Assalamu alayka ya Rasulullah," and then to his side, As-salamu alayka khalifata Rasulillah, and then Umar. With this we conclude Abu Bakr, and next time we start Umar ibn Khattab inshaAllah. And let me remind you something I hope you have not forgotten. Before you leave, we are not individuals sitting on neighboring chairs. We want to be a community. Look to the right and to the left. Exchange the names and maybe other information with those people. You will forget once, you will forget 10 times, you will forget 100 times, hopefully after 1,000 times you will get to know each other by name, which is the first step towards building a community. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Does anyone have any questions? We have a few minutes for questions. Okay, could you please just hold down, just stay in your seats for 1 minute or two so we can take a few questions. Yes.
Come to the microphone.
Which is where? Over here?
The mic,
no, for the taping. Well, it's not for you, it's for us.
I'm here in the microphone, not you. I was wondering why is it that, that Omar...
Oh, that makes sense. Does it work?
It does work.
I was wondering why, when Omar took over as Khalifa, why he requested that Abu Ubaida take over the army in the middle of... Why he needed that?
Yes, Omar was the opinion that Khalid's sword was a bit harsh, and that his military side in one or two incidents overwhelmed his humane side, but the motor was stronger than the brakes, and Khalid also feared that because Khalid was the Omar, feared that because Khalid was such a genius, that people might get to idolize him. The man who is never defeated, the invincible, the sacred, etc., etc. I once heard Hassan al-Banna, you know Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Ikhwan, during a class, a private class, a small number class, he said, "Oh, Sayyidina Omar, why didn't you just leave Khalid to go along?" And many people feel that way. If it were to Khalid, then the political Islam would have spread much faster and much wider, etc. But this was the personal judgment of Omar, and Khalid took it in the most chivalrous way. He didn't keep a grudge, etc. I think within the context of our Islamic centers, it might be a good idea to look at Khalid in this context. It is all right not to be elected. It is all right to be removed from the board. It is all right not to be the chairman. It is all right not to lead, etc., etc. But your allegiance is to Islam all the time. But that was probably the ijtihad of Omar ibn Khattab.
Assalamu alaikum. Did the father of Abu Bakr died as a Muslim or as...
Oh yes, he became a Muslim after the conquest of Makkah. But he became a Muslim. Abu Quhafa was his name.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Hassan.